Ladies and gentlemen, Judge Sykes and Judge Tinder and I are very pleased to have sitting with us today Chief Justice Lewis of the Supreme Court of Liberia, who is the head of a Liberian legal delegation that's visiting the United States. So welcome, Chief Justice Lewis, and get a chance to see our judicial system in action. Our first case, United States versus Blake. Mr. Brandstrater.
Good morning, Judge Posner, Justices, Counsel for the Government. May it please the Court, my name is Thomas Brandstrater, and along with Patrick Blagan, we represent Byron Blake in this courtroom. Mr. Blake was charged with three counts of distribution of narcotics, specifically crack cocaine. Prior to trial, unbeknownst to Mr. Blake, government moved to disqualify his lawyer, who was also, at the time of his representation of Mr. Blake, under investigation by the federal government. Counsel was appointed, and the matter proceeded to trial. As we stand here today, we ask this court to find that the accumulation of error that took place at this trial denied Mr. Blake a fair trial. Stand here having to concede and acknowledge that for the majority of the evidentiary errors, there was no objection. Thus, we are faced with the task of overcoming the plain error standard of review. But when the court steps back and looks at the totality of the circumstances under which this trial occurred, and at the crucial times, trial counsel failing to object, the number of times the failure to object and the error occurred, we beseech this court to find after that consideration that a line was crossed, that despite the lack of objection in the record, there were simply too many errors that affected the fair process and protocol of a federal trial. The first error we draw the court's attention to is the admission of the weapon. It came through via the testimony of a co-defendant, Mr. Ivory. There was no notice prior to trial on the admission of this weapon. In fact, during trial, when the issue came up, Mr. Ivory said that he had never seen Mr. Blake with a gun during a drug transaction. He had seen Mr. Blake with guns, but never during a drug transaction, never in the company of drugs. The government, in its brief, argued that this gun was, one, apparently not a bad act or a wrongful act. And if that is so, our question to them and to this court, then why ask the question? Why is it relevant? If it's not a bad act, why ask Mr. Ivory if there are guns involved? We can assume that they talked to Mr. Ivory before he testified, and therefore by asking the question, the only import of it can be to prejudice the trier of fact that Mr. Blake was somehow a gun-toting drug dealer when the government could not prove that fact with other evidence.
Yeah, but the evidence is overwhelming. Let me ask you about the sentencing. The quantity, the drug quantity, the 2 years. Now, do you have any quarrel with the two-year interval?
Mr. Ivory's answer to how long he was buying drugs from Mr. Blake? No, Judge, we can't, in that I think it was established that there was a relationship of some length between Mr. Blake and Mr. Ivory.
Well, what do you mean of some length? Is it 2 years or some different period?
There was that's what I'm referring to, is the 2 year.
Well, 2 years from when? When to when?
It was from 2000, actually, I think it was January 2005. Actually, a little less than 2 years. I think it was more like 18 months.
Well, isn't that important to you or not?
Well,
does it
is, Judge. Is there any
difference as far as the sentence is concerned between 18 and 24 months?
Our response, however, Judge, is that Mr. Ivory can say that. It went uncorroborated. Nobody else said that.
Answer my question. You say it's not 24 months, it's 18 months. My question is, if that's correct, that's what you're saying, does that make a difference to his sentence? That would reduce the quantity by 25%. So would that make a difference in the sentence?
Yes, Judge.
So are you arguing that, in fact, it is 18 months, not 24 months?
Judge, we're arguing that Mr. Ivory's testimony went uncorroborated as to how much drugs he bought from Mr.
That's
Blake.
That's a separate question. There are two questions. How much per week and how long? Was it 18 months or 24 months?
Mr. Ivory said it was 4.5 ounces every 2 weeks for 2 years.
Well, the 2 years, is the 2 years correct or incorrect?
He testified it was 2 years.
Well, you said 18 months. Now, what is it?
I was wrong to say 18 months. Mr. Ivory's testimony said it was his relationship with Mr. Blake.
That's
was 2 years.
I asked you. So he wasn't saying 2 years from the date of trial or something like that started 2 years ago, because then it would have ended with his arrest. 2 clear years, is that what he meant? 2 clear years when your client was selling?
Well, I hesitate to use the word clear as to Mr. Ivory's testimony, but that's what he said. It was 2 years from...
So you're not questioning the 24 months. You're just questioning the 4.5...
Yes, Your Honor.
Whatever. And what's your basis for questioning that?
In the actual physical evidence that was tested by the government, the actual 3 or 4 or 5 phone calls that talked about amounts, it was not always 4.5. It was not always crack. In fact, the government expert never really said, this is all crack. She said it was cocaine-based. 2 of the exhibits tested were cocaine-based. 1 of them was powder. So Mr. Ivory wasn't always correct if those were the drugs he got from Mr. Blake, that they were always crack.
So what do you think is the quantity the judge should have used in sentencing?
The substances that were tested by the government.
So what would that amount to?
I think it came out to a base offense level of 32, I'm not sure. I think we put it in our brief.
Okay, well, that's fine. Okay.
The other aspect of the sentencing judge, and I've already touched on it, obviously, is that the court relied on the special verdict and the testimony of the witnesses who had purchased narcotics to find that it was crack. Well, it's belied by the government's expert, who did not say it was crack. This court knows that all cocaine base is not crack, although all crack is cocaine base, and that the special verdict form relied on the district court, by the district court, really was a sentencing issue. It didn't really give the jury a definition of what crack is or what they should find. The trial testimony has to tell them that what crack is. So that the reliance on the jury verdict to find that the substances or the type of drugs was crack was error. And for that reason, the reason we've stated that the true measure of the quantity of drugs involved were that tested and seized by the government and should form the basis of the calculations for the sentence. We go back, Judge, to the errors that we believe occurred at trial. We've spoken to the admission of the gun without notice and in violation of federal rule. We speak to the hearsay statements elicited by the government, the gist of which was to show Mr. Blake owned cars, owned fast cars, burned money, owned a strip club. All of it came in through hearsay witness or hearsay testimony under no recognized exception. I believe the government even concedes that Agent Matthews' testimony about what they learned from their informants about Mr. Blake was hearsay.
Did Ivory testify that his relationship with the with your client began 2 years ago?
I'm sorry, Judge.
Isn't that what he said, that the relationship began 2 years ago when he testified at trial?
Yes.
Well, what's 2 years before the trial?
Would have been sometime in 2004.
No.
Late 2003. The
When was the trial?
Mr. Ivory testified that he had been selling crack cocaine in the East St. Louis area 7 years prior to 2006, and he described that he bought cocaine from a narcotics supplier who told him that he got the drugs from Blake in 2000 and 2001. And Ivory's testimony was that later he testified that Blake became his direct supplier. And I guess my math is wrong, but I would say that that had to be somewhere in the area of 2004.
Well, I thought he testified that his relationship began 2 years before the trial. Well, what was the day of the trial?
In March 2007, I'm sorry.
Well, then why isn't 2 years before that March 2005?
I think it points out that Mr. Ivory's memory can't be relied upon.
I don't understand you. You seem to be arguing against yourself, right? Because if his relationship started in March 2005 and they were arrested in October 2006, that's not 24 months.
That's correct, Judge. I'm not arguing that Mr. Ivory is got his dates right or his length of time right. Our argument is that the calculation based on his...
I understand you. If his testimony actually shows only 19 months of this, you know, relationship of 4.5 ounces a week, why isn't that in your favor? Why aren't you embracing that testimony?
Because we don't believe it was that much, and we don't believe
yes,
the other...
I know that, but don't you... But look, the quantity is a function both of the length of time and of the sales per, you know, or, you know, per week. But why don't you want to compress the length of time?
Obviously,
from 24 months to 18 or 19 months?
Well, obviously we would, Your Honor, but I believe his testimony specific about amounts was only for 2 years. As his other testimony says, it was a lot longer.
About amounts. We're talking about the interval. You multiply the number of 4.5 or some lesser quantity or not cocaine or not crack or whatever by the number of weeks of this sale relationship. And his testimony seems to indicate it was 19 months. You insist it's 24 months. I don't see how that helps your client.
It doesn't. It does not help my client.
Well, rest of your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Garrison?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Bob Garrison. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District. I was one of the two attorneys who tried this case at the district court level. My participation in the trial was limited to questioning the police witnesses, however. Perhaps I should start with the questions you posed to my esteemed opponent concerning the quantities of cocaine, since that seemed to be a focus of the court's interest. My recollection of the trial, of course, was in late March 2007. My recollection is that at that trial, Ivory said that he had dealt with the defendant, Blake, for 2 years and had been buying multiple ounce quantities of crack cocaine every week for 2 years. I took that testimony to mean, and I do not have it before me as the court does, I took the testimony of Ivory to mean that prior to the arrest of Blake in late 2006, that he had been dealing with Blake for a couple of years. I don't know how he phrased it.
Well, he said the relationship began 2 years ago.
Well, clearly Blake was locked up for a period of almost a year prior to his trial, so the relationship couldn't have continued during the interim between Blake's arrest and the trial.
So if it began 2 years ago, it wasn't 2 years worth of selling.
If you take it literally, no, sir. But the way I think the plain meaning of what Ivory said when he testified was, when Blake and I were out on the street rolling, I dealt with him a couple of years.
Okay, so what about the quantity? Now, you know, your opponent says the transcripts indicate sometimes it was less and sometimes it wasn't crack.
That's true. However, I would point out to the court that we know about one particular occasion, reference at Government Exhibit Number 1, when the defendant, Mr. Blake, was caught on audio videotape, sound on film, selling 7.5 ounces.
So how is the 4.5 average computed?
Through the testimony of Brian Ivory himself. That was his testimony, that I bought about that quantity every week for 2 years.
But given that sometimes he bought less and sometimes he bought more, did he testify this was his estimate of the average?
Yes, that's my recollection.
And then what about this, but was it all crack?
No. What I was trying to indicate a moment ago, Your Honor, on the specific occasion when he is caught on videotape, he's selling 7.5 ounces, almost twice as much as Ivory said he usually bought, and it is crack cocaine on that occasion. To me, that gives substantial corroboration to Ivory's testimony that, yes, sometimes I bought more and sometimes I bought less.
Yes, did he also say sometimes it wasn't crack?
Yes, he did. And if you will, if I may address that, Your Honor, if you look in the government's, the transcripts of the Title III tapes, which are in the government's appendix, and I didn't earmark this because, quite frankly, Your Honor, you took me by surprise with this point.
Oh, yeah, it isn't emphasized in this brief.
Well, in the Title III intercepts, which are in the government's index, you will notice at one time that Ivory complains to Blake that you gave me powder and I wanted crack.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that is a pointed issue between the two of them, that you misunderstood my order. I wanted crack.
Well, even if half of it is crack and half of it is powder, on each of these occasions for this duration of time, we're still well in excess of the floor necessary for offense level 38, aren't we?
Yes, 13 kilograms is much greater than 4, and 13 kilograms is what the pre-sentence report indicated. Given the evidence about the transactions that were surveyed being a multiple ounce quantities of crack, and the fact that Ivory testified, look, this is what I usually got, and it's corroborated by the surveillance tapes, I think the pre-sentence report was right, or at least arguably right, in relying on the testimony of Ivory. The point
wasn't
I had
the wiretap calls involving 8 ounces of powder, though.
Well, sir, the wiretaps involve all kinds of things, but the first item in the government's appendix is a transcript of an undercover videotape. And on that videotape, you know, it's not a wiretap. It's an undercover surveillance tape where you can see Byron Blake hand the informant 7.5 ounces of crack cocaine and receive from the informant $3,000 in cash. That is not a Title III intercept. It's an undercover tape. In addition to the undercover tape, there are Title III tapes, which are excerpted in the government's appendix. And in those Title III tapes, they talk about, Blake asks, how do you want that food on your plate? You want it 1 and 3, 2 and 2, what? And Ivory testified, he's asking me how much of it do I want in powder and how much of it do I want in crack. On the Title III tapes, you can also hear Mr. Blake say, and I'm going to omit the profanity, listen, you cannot leave me out here in my car like this for a long time. I'm carrying a lot of dope. Now, I'm paraphrasing what he said to avoid the profanity, but it's crystal clear what he's talking about in the context of that tape. What I had originally intended to start with,
I will... Crystal clear as between powder and crack?
No, that they're talking about...
Drugs.
Yes, but that they are obviously talking about drugs, but when they're talking 3 and 1, 2 and 2, what... that they are talking about, do you want powder or do you want crack? But that is also clear from that same conversation about how do you want that food on your plate divided up. What I had intended to start with, I will now conclude with. In this case, I have alluded to the undercover tape where you can see Mr. Blake selling 7.5 ounces of crack, and to the Title III tapes where Mr. Blake discusses at length the conspiracy in progress. When the government arrested and the court called on the defendant to present his case, the defendant rested without producing evidence. So that is the state of play. We have the irrefutable physical evidence the government produced, and the defense chose not to produce any evidence whatever. The burden of persuasion in this case falls on the appellant, and it is that the outcome probably would have been different without the error. Now, given the state of play here, where the government had the irrefutable physical evidence and the defendant had nothing, I think it's completely strains credibility to say, but for this evidence about the wiretaps and the evidence about the gun, the jury would have reached a different result. And yet that is the position that the appellant in this case is forced to defend. Unless there are any further questions from the court, that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Garrison. Mr. Brandstrader, how much time does he have? 2 minutes? Okay,
just if I might.
Sure.
I apologize for not being clear before. Mr. Blake was arrested in October of 2006. Trial was in March of 2007. At trial, Mr. Ivory said that at some point in his 6 or 7 years of selling narcotics in East St. Louis, Mr. Blake became his supplier. He was asked specifically when did that happen, and he said maybe 2 years ago. And this, I think, emphasizes why we can't rely on Mr. Ivory for much. 2 years ago from when? 2 years ago from when he was sitting in the witness chair, 2 years ago from before Mr. Blake got arrested. So the point that we so inartfully tried to make is to rely on this man's testimony, his remembrance, his evidence, to calculate a sentence is at risk, is a risky proposition. The calculation for a sentence done on this type of testimony is not reliable and it's not reasonable. The court made a comment about overwhelming evidence, and with all due respect, we've seen worse. I guess we've seen less. But it is our position, Judge, and it is said with respect, that at some point when we talk about the accumulation of these errors that occur at trial, we're not always hopefully going to base everything on the amount of guilt or innocence that may seem, the amount of guilt that may seem to be present. There has to be a process, and it has to be fair, and it has to be with notice. And it has to be some balancing of evidence coming into the record. And we say in this court, and we ask this court to find that in Mr. Blake's case, in Mr. Blake's trial, that did not occur. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Brandstrader and Mr. Garrison.